Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. This is part two of our talk with John Higgins. John Higgins, who is now retired from game officiating, was one of the most well-regarded, well-known, and by fans, I think, disliked officials in college basketball. And if you listen to part one, you'd know why, because he wasn't scared to make the big call on the road. He's got the sandy brown hair. And of course, he talked to us about his yoga pants and why he wore those. So there's a lot to him. I think you'll really enjoy part two, where we start to talk about a little bit more about officiating and what he wishes he could change about the game, how he would do it if he put together a rule book. And does he miss it now with his first year where he's not officiating college games? What's it like to officiate in the Final Four? All these things upcoming. We had a crazy weekend in college basketball where Michigan State, kind of out of nowhere, figured it out for a day against Baylor. But the bigger one to me that's worth talking about is Bronny James. Bronny had 5 points, came off the bench. USC gets stomped by Auburn. And I kind of circled around something which appears to be obvious to me. Now, are there other factors, right? We don't have a control group, so we don't really, really know as far as a case study. The fact is last year at Sierra Canyon wasn't very good. And when I say not very good, I don't mean they're below 500, but they played Sherman Oaks Notre Dame 4 times, lost all 4 times. Didn't beat any of the good teams in their league. And he had just an okay senior season. And I think, you know, Bronny, in his defense, handles all the pressure, all the attention quite well. But one of the things it's made him in is he's not really a leader. He's not a point guard, doesn't really take command, just kind of plays. He's what I would call blend player. He blends in. He's a chameleon. He can fit in kind of anywhere, and he's fine at it. But considering that Jonathan Givony put him as the 10th rated prospect in all of basketball, that's not a blend player spot. And again, this is not Bronny's fault. I don't even think it's LeBron's fault. Yes, LeBron James tweeted out that he's better than NBA players. He's not. It's not close. But he's also a dad, right? That's how dads view their kids. I coach youth basketball, and when we get done with the tournament, without any chance to breathe, I get a text from every dad, and they all want to know why their kid didn't play more, that their kid is awesome, their kid is special. That's part of what we do as dads. We love our kids, we try and protect our kids, but we also want to promote our kids, and we view our kids on a higher level than maybe even they're able to achieve. But the overhyping of him and the throngs of fans and all that, that stuff, I think it makes it harder for Bronny, but maybe even anything harder for his teammates. I mean, like, there's no real case study there, but if we start with Sierra Canyon last year, and then in addition to Sierra Canyon, we go to, I don't know, this year's USC team. Like, they're not good, but they should be better than they are. And the question becomes, is one reason they're not as good as they should be because of all the hype surrounding Bronny James? I don't actually know the answer to that, but I can suspect that it doesn't make it easy. You know, it's just not. I mean, consider you're Boogie Ellis. You're in your fifth year as a senior. You're like Bronny James, a former McDonald's All-American. And he's played, this is his third school, and he just wants to go out and hoop. Then you have Isaiah Collier, who I'm sure loves the extra added attention. And maybe it's that Isaiah Collier doesn't really guard anybody. Not a great shooter. I don't think he's the number one prospect, but that's how Gavoni had him rated. Others have had him rated that as well. It's one of the reasons I love college basketball. It kind of exposes what you do and what you don't do nearly as well. Anyway, point being that we don't know so much about what has made this USC team, I guess you could say, underachieve. But the truth is, they were a preseason top 20 team. They do have some talent. And yet you look at all the big games they've lost, you know, except start the year when I think they beat K-State, but K-State was not whole at that point in time. And then, of course, they lost to Long Beach State at home, and Long Beach State is not having a great year. Dan Munson's under some pressure. And yes, it was the biggest game for Long Beach State all year, considering it was Bronny's debut and LeBron was there. But as we look to try and figure out, we know who's good, right? Arizona, Purdue, those teams are outstanding. UConn, Kansas, Kentucky, most of the usuals. Oklahoma's a surprising team. We'll talk about them in a second. But to me, it's really interesting to watch how all of this hype affects Bronny James. And maybe more importantly, it doesn't affect Bronny James. He's used to it. He deals with it. He's dealt with it his entire life. It's how does it affect USC? Because it completely negatively impacted Sierra Canyon last year. If there's a surprise team in college basketball, it's probably Oklahoma. Now, they have 10 new players, but it should be pointed out that two of their returners, or their two returners, are their point guard and their center. So you do bring back some of your culture. But, you know, J.R. McCollum is just such a dynamic player as a combo guard, transfers in from Siena, and he's a guy who can take Milos off the ball and can also play to guard himself. I mean, they bring in Jalen Moore, who is a nice player, hasn't played a ton of basketball from Georgia Tech, play him at the four. You know, they play Owe at the three, or sometimes they switch the two. Owe is a great, you know, brother plays in the NFL, and he's a dynamic athlete, albeit really 15 feet and in is kind of an undersized 3-4, if you will. They have a nice team. They bring off the bench a kid named Darth Hard, who transferred in from Utah Valley, a great shooter. And they just have a nice mix of 6, 7, 8 guys. Now, they have not been pushed. And if you look at who they've played, you know, on paper, normally, Iowa, that's a heck of a win, right? But Iowa's down this year. Let's just be honest. North Carolina is a big game for them as they play Wednesday on the road against the Tar Heels, who are old, who are experienced, with the exception of Elliot Cadu, who's a freshman who reclassified, but he's actually the age of a college freshman. I look at Oklahoma and I think they're a surprise team, but I do wonder what happens now that they play. Remember, the tougher teams that they played, again, on paper, Iowa, USC, Iowa, not particularly good, or down at least, lost 4 seniors from last year. USC, who we've talked about, it's been disappointing. And Arkansas, who, if you saw them against Kentucky, you think they're great. But if you see them on any other night, you're like, they're just okay. They lost a lot from last year. And playing a lot of young guys. Now they play North Carolina. And then, you know, you get into league play and it gets real. I think Oklahoma's pretty good. They're better than I thought, but I'm not sure how they handle the adversity of losing. Porter Moser is a tremendous coach, and he's playing a different style, much more up-tempo, much more in-your-face defensively. But the question is always, what happens when the level of competition gets raised? Does a team that doesn't really have any sort of culture and structure because it's so new from last year, how do they do when they lose a game? We'll see. We'll see if they do lose in Chapel Hill. All right, let's get you to part two of All Ball with John Higgins.
Well, okay, so back in this time, you were, I mean, the one thing about the Big Eight back then, you couldn't fly at all these spots, right? So give me the hairiest trip you can remember from the old Big Eight days.
It was probably on an ice road. It was two lanes back from Omaha to Stillwater, actually. Right. Just there was two lanes going from here to, well, from Wichita to Oklahoma to Stillwater, and it took like 9-10 hours on the ice-covered roads, like 2 inches thick of ice. And actually, we left the night before and stayed the night in York, Nebraska. And it was because I knew it was going to be bad. And then there's snow and there's ice on the ground. It was brutal. I actually drove my truck, my four-wheel drive truck, and that was vehicles off the road everywhere. And I brought the guy that works for me. He came with me. And that was talking about treacherous. I got there maybe 15 minutes before the game started, but I worked the game.
Hey, did you ever miss a game because of travel?
Yeah, I have. Like, flights are canceled. I was going to Fresno once and I got fogged in and I couldn't make it. Midway, they turned around and went back, and yeah, I've missed a couple of games, but not many compared to how many games I've done over my years. Missing games because of weather or something happened to the plane, only maybe a couple of times.
The NCAA tournament. Now that's how you guys are truly evaluated, as you find out, in terms of gaining respect nationally. When was your first NCAA tournament game?
It was 94. Yeah, 94. And I was scared to death. Yeah. I was very young. I was only a couple years into it, 2, 3, 4 years into it. And I got my first call. I mean, back then, they used to send you a packet in the mail, a FedEx packet. And that was crazy. Yeah.
What was the game?
It was a 116 game in Memphis, Tennessee, in the old pyramid. I don't remember the teams. I remember I was with Dunnegy, was the Tim Dunnegy's dad, and I can't think of the other official I was with. But I remember Boomer Bain was there, and he was the observer, and he said, it looked like you had shit in your pants, son. And I did. Back then, you were scared. I mean, the NCAA tournament was you're a big boy. And once you get to that NCAA tournament, you're like, you felt like you've made it. And now it takes a while to move from 116 game to a 8-9 game or 7-8 game or what have you. But that was nerve-wracking, that's for sure.
Now, were you still going to the camps at this time, or did you only go that one time?
I just went the one time. Yeah. Nowadays, guys go to 10, 15, 20 camps before they ever get thought of, because it's very competitive. There was 144 people at the NCAA Academy this year. There was they put 100 guys at each camp, and it's tough now. That, I mean, it's, you get 2, 3, 4 guys out of that camp that you may hire and may have a chance to be good enough. And out of those, maybe one of those guys will ever make it. It's a competitive deal.
Now that you're hiring, what are you looking for? What does your eye catch? Because the rest of us, we don't really know what we're looking at. Right. You know, I would say that a lot of people would just say, like, hey, if I don't actually notice the referees, that's when they're at their best. But that's not necessarily what you're looking for. What are you looking for?
Guys, he looks the part, number one. He's poised. He's consistent. And he can communicate in toughness. If you talk to coaches, the one thing they say, at least in my role now, one thing they say to me is consistency, 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 and communication. That's it. That's all they want. Consistency and communication. Because they know we're going to kick calls. We're going to kick them, and we'll do it both ways. And that's the way it is. But that's what they want. And I want guys that fit that role. And I want tough guys, too. I want guys that have courage to make the tough call in the tough situation. And it's tough to see that at camps. So, you know, that's why, like, now I'm beating the road and trying to find those guys in games. And I'm working it. It's not the easiest deal in the world, but we'll get them. We'll find them.
Okay. So your first Final Four was when?
2000. I was in Detroit. 2000 and I don't know. I don't remember all that stuff. I don't have like a wall where I have all the Final Fours and all that kind of stuff.
But it was Detroit. Okay.
Yeah, it was Detroit.
Okay, so this is not FedEx packet. How did you find out you're doing the Final Four?
A phone call. Yeah, phone call. They call you and say, hey, we'd be interested in working the Final Four. Yeah, of course not. Yeah, yeah. But I remember John Adams coming and said, hey, just no pressure. There's only, 70,000 people out in the stands and maybe 70 million watching on TV. I'm like, oh, thanks a lot. So you go through that motions, but once you get to that Final Four and once the ball goes up, it's another game, really. It's just another game.
But now, is it harder spatially? Because, if you've been up on that court, it's a little different when you're playing. Spatially, as an official, it's the same?
It's the same. It feels like it's a bigger court. It really does.
Yeah.
It does. It just feels like you just have way more room everywhere.
What about the difference of understanding the magnitude of calls late in games? I know that, like, look, if you're supposed to write a book, you're supposed to be consistent, a call in the first 5 minutes is a call in the last 5 minutes. But, there's a call here, a call there, which can dramatically change the history of the sport. Mm-hmm. So what is your philosophy on last 5 minutes or even last minute of a game, especially championship level games, in how you officiate them?
Well, that's a really good question also. That people say, you always hear people say, let the players decide it. Well, if a guy hits a guy in the arm on a shot at the end of the game, and it's not a much of a hit to the arm, just brushes his elbow like they try to do, you don't call it, guess what? That affects the outcome of the game. You don't call it, people say, oh, that's not much of a foul. Well, it is a foul. So if you don't call it, you're going to affect one team or the other. If you call it, it's going to affect the team that the foul was on. If you don't, it chops it away. So you just got to call it as you see it, I guess. And it's very difficult. You can't, the one thing I would say is don't get the big stuff. Don't let the little stuff, the stuff that's inconsequential, go. I would say, if there's something away from the ball you could talk a guy out of, or you could pass on it, and I would probably say that would be one of the things that you would try to do that, or put a third foul in the first half on their best player, or that's a gray area play. That's something that you could pass on.
So so you do know if it's a star player, you do know, like, he's got two.
Well, you got to be smart, but you're not going to pass on what's a legitimate foul.
No question.
You're not going to. But if you got, say you have the star guy in there, and it's something that is gray. If you could pass on it without anything being affected, I think that's what you should do to keep those people in the game. Now, if you have the 14th player in the game in, and he's a knucklehead. And it's like, coach, I said to referees all the time, who do you want in, the 13th, 14th player? Or you want in the top five guy? Well, you think the coach would want, and you would want, the best players in the game. So if you could kind of referee on that philosophy, that's, you'll be better off in the long run.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, Love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top of
that. I'm like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in a bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is. With just a few taps on the app, you can have Angie tackle your home service project start to finish.
With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. It's your one-stop shop. Angie can help you find the best price for your project by comparing quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps or book services at an upfront price based on local data. They get the difficulties that can come with home projects. They get it. Why not make it as simple as possible? Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com or download the app today.
There's a lot of things that have changed over time. I would tell you one of the things that's changed for the worst over time is, I think, you mentioned Steve Wilmer, and you and I have discussed him, who's just a delightful man, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Always, I'm sure somewhere he's listening to this, hiking up his pants as we speak.
The pants meter.
I actually learned something from him. It was, so my first year I was at Notre Dame, we had Jim Burr and we had all those Big East Coast mm-hmm. officials.
Yeah.
But when I went to Oklahoma State, I remember one time the ball went out of bounds, like off of us. But I felt like I got fouled and it was a timeout, and I'm sitting there having a discussion with him, and he goes, "Cut! I missed the foul. So I'm going to give you the ball, even though it's not your ball." Right. Which mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. good officiating, right? Like, yeah. I screwed up, but instead of, I can't go back. So instead of going back, it's just going to be your ball, right?
Yeah.
But it's now with replays, it's really hard to do, right? It's hard. There's things you can't go back. Have replays made it better or worse from your perspective?
My opinion, I think it's made it worse. Just because everybody wants the referees to be perfect when we're not going to be perfect, because the players aren't perfect and the coaches aren't perfect. But they want us to be perfect. You could do that now in a 20-30 point game, especially at the end of a game. But with video replay now, if you don't get it right, everybody tortures you for getting it wrong. That's the part that's changed that I don't like. That's how I was taught how to officiate games like that, like Wilmer would do, and all the top guys would do. They would do it that way. You know, there's guys over the back a little bit, ball goes off his hand. They didn't call a foul, just gave the ball back. And that, just like you right. just said, I think that's okay. But in nowadays with the video replay and everybody wants everybody to be perfect, it's really, really hard to do. Young guys can't do that.
No, no, absolutely not. A lot has changed. Okay. In the time in which the 30 years in which he became the most known ref in the country, I'd say the charge on the dribbler, when the guy's dribbling the basketball and he takes a little contact, because the charge under the basket has always been a bang bang play. It's always a hard one. And some of the evaluation of it has changed, but what has most changed is guys, you know, following like fainting goats when they're, when you're driving. What is your opinion of that? Cause again, like you don't want the offensive player to do the Heisman and just clear out. On the other hand, it does feel like the defense is in many ways getting an advantage. And it's hard for the offensive player. What are your thoughts on that type of play?
It's funny you talk about that. We're we've had three, now four teaching videos go out to all of our guys, and we're talking about this path. We call a path play, where the offensive guy has a path to the basket, and the defensive guy is cutting this guy's path off, where he's really, really not legal. He's on the side and not in the front of him, 2 feet facing the opponent, and there's some contact. So we're having a really hard time. We're putting way too many fouls on the offensive guy when there's a little bit of contact and he has his opposite his dribble hand just out there to his guide arm or whatever you want to call it. And there's some contact. We're calling that offensive fouls. I think we're wrong on that play. And we're teaching that in order for that defensive guy, like if I get my head and shoulders on the side of you and the defense is on the left side of me and I'm going past you, that guy, he's no longer in legal guardian position, but we are bailing out the offense or the defensive guy by calling an offensive foul on a little contact. So we're teaching it where the defense has got to be 2 feet facing your opponent in front of them. So on a primary defender, we're talking about not the secondary defender, which is going to be, doesn't matter how they do that. It's going to be, you know, whether it's the last plant foot or if it's the gather or any of that kind of stuff. That's going to be controversial no matter what. But the other play that you're talking about is path plays. And I think over the last so many years, we've been calling way too many offensive fouls.
Agreed. That said, what is your favorite? You've mentioned all great refs have a little prick in them, right? What was always your favorite call to make, you know, in terms of the, because I remember my first time Notre Dame won a Big East game, we played St. John's in the Garden. And they weren't very good. That was Felipe Lopez, cover Sports Illustrated, and Mahoney was the coach, and they were getting booed at home. And we weren't very good, but we were up the whole game. And they went to a 1-3-1 late in the game. And I got really excited. I was just a freshman. And I dribble over to the side to make like a fancy cross-court pass to Pat Garrity for a layup. And I step out of bounds. And I think it was Jim Burr. And he goes and he touches the sideline, like bends down, touches the sideline, and points the other way. And I remember thinking to myself, if I was a ref, that would be my favorite one to call, the old touch the sideline and point the other way. But some like charge, everybody's got their own kind of signature flamboyant call. What was your favorite?
Probably, I don't know. I always get shit for my block call or my offensive foul call. I get shit on that from other referees. Most people wouldn't notice it. But from other referees, they'd give me shit on that play.
So what do they say you do? What do they say? What's the Higgins? Like, oh, you did the Higgins. What's the Higgins?
Well, I'm really slow at the black call, and then the other one, I would just point I wouldn't stop the clock with my fist most of the time. I would just give a little like a little punch out to the offensive foul. The other one I would give 3-point signal. Guys would give me crap about, instead of going like three point go like this, I would go like this with my fingers, so everybody did always make fun of me on that one. So
okay,
now they've changed the mechanic now where I, like my bosses would always say, hey, you need to have some hustle, get to the table, run to the table when you report your fouls. I never did that. I always walked. I always thought it looked so much better and so much more professional when you walked to the table like you had full of confidence in your call. That was one of the things that they changed the mechanic now. Now you can walk to the table now. So, but the block charge play were probably the ones that were kind of my, whatever they call my signature, Higgins block charge play.
Did you work on the mirror? Did you want to look a certain way?
No, it just evolved over the years. I think when I used to do offensive fouls, I used to lift my back leg up, and I'm like, yeah, that looks like shit. I'm not doing that anymore. I saw it on TV a few times, like, let's just act like, you don't have to oversell that play. So don't oversell it. And I didn't. So I was more slow and kind of laid back, and I act like it was simple call. So it didn't look like I was trying to sell the call.
Got it. I'll tell you a couple things that have changed during your time officiating. One is the game has become so much more spread out, right? That you no longer, you used to have a lot of hand fighting and pushing down low. Now it's a different game in that you have guys, the shot goes up, and because everybody's spread out, you have guys kind of sprinting to a rebound, right? And so it's the angles are different. The physicality is still very physical, especially on the boards, but in a different sort of way. How has that changed how you officiate the game? Because the angles are different, the contact is different. Like, you know, guys are running in from the 3-point line to go rebound. So you kind of have a running start, if you will. How does that change what you do and how you do it?
Well, you're right. Every single game play now is pick and roll, pick and roll, pick and roll up on the key. And then once the ball goes up, you've got guys coming from everywhere. So you got to have a broad vision. All three of you guys, used to be the underneath guy would be the guy that would get the fouls on the rebounds. Now you got to have all three guys involved in that front court. You can't have that trail guy backing out and not being involved in the play. Cause in a college game, you know, the ball goes up, it's like 2 pit bulls going at it. It's 6-7 guys, 8 guys going after the ball, and it's brutal. Where it used to be, opposite the NBA, guy ball goes shot up. You don't have 6 guys at the board. You just have 1 or 2 guys and that's it. And there's the ball and nobody follows anybody and it goes the other way. In a college game, it's crazy. And if you don't widen your vision and watch the rebounders and or where the ball's coming from or where it's going, you got a big problem. But it's back in the day we had advantage, disadvantage. You always heard that, right? You have to, if you don't use that philosophy now in rebounding, you can have a foul on every single play on rebounding in college. You can have it on every play. So you got to have an idea on where's the rebound come from? Cause you can call it on both offense and defensive guys. It's really hard. That's probably the hardest part of the game that's changed. I mean, it's got really physical as far as that part goes. The outside hand checking, we call that stuff. That's 10-1-4. We call that stuff. That's not nearly as physical, but the inside, when the rebounding part, I think is physical, really physical.
The other part that has changed is I feel like it's as or more physical in the low post. And so in college basketball, I tell coaches all the time, like, I wouldn't throw it in there. You know, like I just, because one, you know, the use of analytics, it tells you that's not an efficient shot. But two, one of the reasons I think it's an inefficient shot is in trying to eliminate all of the hands, guys are smarter now about using their bodies. And I would also say that, you know, when I first started playing high level basketball, I was taught about verticality, but there was a change. It was about 10 years ago when all of a sudden you guys started really actually allowing players to use verticality. So again, the difference is I think it's harder to score now because one, players are better and smarter at not trying to block everything and they're using verticality, but two, they're also, especially in post play, they're kind of using their lower body that you can't see, and it's really hard for big guys to score in there. What do you think of the changes in that, one, the use of verticality, and two, the physicality in the low post?
They've also changed where you could, you know, if the offensive guy, the offensive guy's trying to back you down, you have the right as a defensive guy to use your form to hold him back. So, you're right about the defense and the post play, because when two guys are coming together, it's hard to determine who has the offensive foul and who is who's committing the foul, the offense or defense. So who are you going to penalize? You gotta first determine who initiated the contact. So that's really hard to do. If they come together and they both hit and they boom, boom, who are you going to call a foul on? You call a foul on one guy's going to be pissed off. You call the other guy's going to be pissed off. So if it's equal pressure, it's about having excess pressure and displacing the offense or displacing the defense. If you can think of the displacement part of it, I think you could officiate the play fairly. It's really, really hard to take out if their two bodies are bumping, who's in the right and who's in the wrong. And it's one of the most difficult parts of the game to officiate on, you know, who's legal, who's not legal, who's displacing. It's really hard to determine that.
When did you change to the like yoga style, like the stretchy pants? When did that happen?
I went to, 10 years ago, 9 years ago. The pants back in the day were terrible. They were awful. But now they're way better. I wear Public Rex or Lululemons for the last 5-10 years. And they're so much more comfortable than the old Zanza belts. It's like night and day better.
How did you not get any NIL out of this thing? Like, if you did,
I don't know. I should. Oh, I should have.
I mean, you shut it down when you should have had NIL. You should have. You mentioned Public Rec. There's all these different brands of those comfortable, movable. What are the rules? What are the rules? You have to have all black sneakers and all black pants. Is there any rule other than I got to have all black sneakers and all black pants, and the pants have to come down, you know, to the shoe? Is that basically what are the actual rules for official attire?
You just have to have black shoes, black pants, the regular NCAA shirt. However, there is a little tiny logo in the back. The manufacturer that makes that shirt is on the back of it. So, we proposed, actually, when you say that, a year ago, some guys in that Southeast and ACC talked about getting an NIL for referees, basically. So why can't, if they can do all that kind of stuff, why can't we put a logo on our shirt? But nothing's come to fruition yet for those guys. So
this call is brought to you by Lululemon.
That's right. Amen.
I mean, you're right. Everything else is sold in the sport. Why are
you
selling
that? Caitlin Clark's on national ads on TV now. It's unbelievable. She's making a killing.
Outside of, so you went to them. Now, do other refs come up to you or like?
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of dudes wearing them now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were the first?
I was the first guy that I know of. I mean, you can ask a bunch of referees. And I remember back in the day when I was a young referee, everybody wore those disgusting black polyester pants from, I don't know who made them. Actually, my brother-in-law, it just owns a clothing store normally. I went to the pleated pants and people would, some of the referees gave me so much crap, but they were much more comfortable than they were now. And then all of a sudden Welmer started wearing them and Tommy O'Neill started wearing them. And now everybody started wearing these pleated pants. And then now they've gone back away and gone to the straight pants. And then that's when all the straight pants, I went to the Lululemons and Public Rec pants.
Classic.
Yeah.
You're a style maven, right? Because what's his name? Was it Forte? What he changed the whistle, right? The Fox 40 whistle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the only other guy I know who's known for changing anything.
Changing style.
Yeah, changing the style. Give me your funniest or most interesting, your best story for running a guy, for throwing a coach out.
Oh, geez. Probably when Fran McCafferty, we threw up Fran at Northern Iowa, and his wife, his wife, I don't know if you know anything about Fran and his family. So, they're very competitive.
Just so you know, okay, so when I went to Notre Dame, Fran recruited me, okay, and his wife at the time, Margaret, was an assistant on the women's team. She was the all-time leading rebounder at Notre Dame at the time. I don't know if she still is. But here's how they were just dating at the time. And what happened is we get done practicing and Fran would observe like their Muppet McGraw's practice. So at first you're like, okay, coach to coach, you're watching. And then at some point I could tell what was up. And I was just like, so I believe, and you could ask Fran next time you see him.
Yeah.
I believe that Fran would tell you I was the first player to discover their romance. So yes, I know a lot about their family.
That's
so
funny.
Yes. So it's
Iowa at Northern Iowa. And they weren't playing worth a damn. And Paul Jansen and I can't remember who else was on the game. Paul got him the first time and I whacked him and threw him out. You know how he does it. He starts going crazy and he's walking, like we're starting to do free throws at the other end of the court. And he's walking up and he's trying to get to me still and the police are on him. Next, you know, his wife is coming after me. And I'm out there, I'm like, it was the craziest thing in the world. I'm talking about ultra competitive people. She's like Greg Marshall's wife. She was competitive. I mean, she's the same exact same way. And I've run him before too. But that was a crazy guy we threw out. Now it's funny. We talked about it at this last summer where we haven't been. It got a little crazy once in not an exhibition, but a close scrimmage at Creighton where him and I were about to go to fisticuffs. And I said, I'm out of here. Cause he was with we're in a close scrimmage here in Omaha. And I told Rasmussen, the AD, and I told McDermott, I was like, you know, this last time I had him, it didn't go so well. He doesn't like me. So he started in on it, and I was like, I'm in. I tagged in. He's in on some young referee. I'm like, shut up. Stop. And he said, you can't talk to me like that. I said, I just did. And he says, you start the assistant coaches are holding back. This is a close scrimmage. Holding back. I said, let him go, boys. Let him go. And then Bruce came out, and Greg came out, and I said, I can't tell you what I said, but it was
You can tell me what you said.
I said, fuck him. I told you this was going to happen. Fuck him. But we talked about it this last summer when we visited in the camp. And again, we've talked earlier about, you know, inside the lines is way different than outside the lines. And we had a really good conversation about it. And then the other one was Bobby Hurley. This is a great story. So I went to speak to their team this year and to preseason, right? Like you go around to talk to coaches and players and that stuff. So he introduces me and says, oh, this is John Higgins, Final Four referee and blah, blah, you know, all that crap. He goes, we're in their theater room. And he goes, hey, we go into him talking about new rules and mechanics and stuff. He says, I got to show you a video. And I remember I had the Arizona State game where I threw him out. I was like 70 foot away. And he, and kudos to him, he goes, boys, and after I whack him, show the first run, then whack him and run him, and he start pulling off his coat and his shirt and his tie, and he goes, boys, this is not how you're supposed to act, just so you know. So kudos to kudos to Bobby Hurley.
There's so many of them like that, where, like, Fran, you mentioned Fran, Bobby's like that too, mm-hmm. where, like, you sit and you watch with them, and they're just so calm and so nice and thoughtful. Mm-hmm. Then James going, different human being.
Totally different human being. I mean, my conversations with Bobby Hurley now are like, I mean, when the lights go on, he's just, who's him, Larry Stacy, there's guys like that, when the lights go on, it was, yeah, they're a different person.
Most games you've ever worked in a year?
105.
What's that like on your body?
It's not, you know, I was a little bit younger then, so didn't feel like it was that big of a deal. Actually, the body it's the mind it's harder on your mind than it is the body. Because you got to be mentally prepared for it every night. I work out I still do. I still work out 4 or 5 days a week. So I remember when I didn't have a game for 2, 3, 4 days, and I came back, I felt like I was rusty. So, but once you work that many games, it's the mental part that's way worse than the physical part. If you're in good shape. If you're not in good shape and and you have something that's hurting, you got a knee or ankle or hip or whatever, that's hard. That's really hard to be focused mentally.
Yeah, because that's the criticism, right? The criticism is you guys can work as many games you want. When you were the biggest referee in college basketball, people want you on every night. And the fear is that, hey, I got him on the fifth game in 5 nights. And he's not as mentally sharp. What would your pushback be if somebody said, hey, in our game, you weren't as sharp because you worked the last 3 nights?
See, I don't buy that. I think you're sharper because you see more plays. It's like you taking jump shots every single day or shooting free throws. You're sharper. The more you shoot, the better you are. I think that's the way my mentality is. If I work, I would say a guy works 4 to 5 days a week, I think it's perfect. But again, I always say it's 2 hours a day that you're working as your referee. And I don't think that's really that difficult. You got to be mentally and physically sharp. You got to be, you do have to do some studying on your teams that you play and the coaches that you have. So that part of it is, you know, outside the 2 hours. But I would rather have a guy that's working 4 or 5 days a week than the guy who's worked once a week, because that guy hasn't seen enough plays. I said to the young guys, you got to keep seeing plays. You got to see plays. You got to put yourself in situations, because you learn by experience. And the more experience you have, the better off you are to make a decision in a tough time.
So something that I think you said, which I completely agree with. And you know me, like, I made a mm-hmm. quip about you in an NCAA tournament game. I've been on TV hard on mm-hmm. officials on a play here or there. But there's a way in which we, and I don't think it's just officials, right? Government officials, teachers, how we look at people, anybody who's in authority, police officers, our lack of kind of societal respect for who they are and what they do. You did it for a long time. And I know you've been kind of outspoken on how, like, look, the reason we have a referee shortage is, why would anybody want to put themselves in a position where I'm actually, I drive by, there's a place where called the Maps, where we play a weekend or 2 weekends a month. And that was where, you know, you have one girl punch another girl and then the parents go after the official. How has it changed from your perspective in terms of how people treat officials during your 30 years of doing it at the highest level?
Well, at the lower level, it's crazy. I think it's the money part at all these tournaments that they put together. the money part of it. People think they can say and do what they want to do because they paid for their kid to play on this basketball team. So they think they have the right to say what they want to say to their referees. Like they think that their Johnny is going to be the next Michael Jordan, Kevin Durant, but you know, 99.9% of them aren't going to be those people. It's gotten brutal compared to the past. Of course, I mean, back when I was playing a little, I mean, it was CYO basketball. No parents said a word. And in fact, half the parents didn't even come. That was just had too many kids, or that's just what they didn't do. They dropped their kid off and they'd play and be done. Now every parent's got to go to everything and they got to have a voice about everything. And it's unfortunate for the kids if, because they're embarrassed of kids. If you ask a kid about it now and they're hear a kid talk about their parents, it says something to the referee or the coach, they're embarrassed by it. It's gotten really bad. I mean, a couple of years ago where my 16-year-old son and I, his partner didn't show up for a game, and we're refereeing some freshmen, and they were really bad freshmen. And this kid tells me to fuck off and you suck. And after he fouled out, he's terrible. This kid couldn't play dead in a cowboy movie. And I couldn't believe it. And I found out his dad was a coach and he's acceptable to what the kid did. It was sad, really sad.
Wait, so you hopped in with your son?
My son. It was freshman, bad freshman. It was one of those summer camp things or whatever they are over in Iowa. And I refereed the game, and it was this kid, this team was not very good. It was, but they were just beat the hell out of the other team. And the team came back and beat them. Neither team was any good. But this kid just kept fouling. And we kept calling fouls, and the coach started saying stuff, and I stopped him and I whacked him. And then the kid did, and I whacked him. And then he had got his fifth foul, he walked out. He's 10 foot from me, flipped me off. He said, "You fucking suck." This is a 14-year-old kid saying that to me. I was like, oh boy. So I entered the game, and we threw the coach out, and he denied that he didn't know the kid. And it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. And that's sad part of our society. And that's why majority of people don't stay in refereeing.
Yeah, no, it's a terrible part of our society. It's your kid gets in trouble in school, and you find out, do you confront the kid and make him, you know, apologize, make change, or do you ask the kid and then call the teacher or call the principal like the teacher did something wrong? That's right. What we do. Yeah. I don't know where that comes from.
I have no idea where it's coming from. It wasn't like that when I was growing up. We had nuns in my grade school and high school, and whatever they did, that hell, they beat the hell out of you. And my mom did never say anything to them, never. And you did something wrong, obviously. But that's just the society today. I don't know why it changed or how it changed, but it's changed. That's for sure.
You talked about Allen Fieldhouse, what a cathedral it is. Why does it feel like for road teams that they don't get a fair end of the shake?
I don't know. That's a good question. I've had people always said, oh, you know, if you look on these boards of different universities, oh, Higgins is a homer for this guy, for this team, and Kansas State, he's a homer for there, and Oklahoma, he's a homer, and blah, blah, blah. Every school says the same thing about officials. Like I used to hear that about the Kansas. The funny thing is I used to get phone calls at our office from people from Kansas say, why do you hate Kansas so bad? You know, they get beat by Kansas State or get beat by somebody, and I had the game. I don't know. I don't think it's true. It's just, they've had good teams. They've had good players. I mean, you can't deny that. They won national championship. They win 30 games a year. It doesn't matter where they play. It's just like that. Any team that's winning, winning, winning.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in the bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is.
In just a few taps in the Angie app or clicks on the site, you can have Angie tackle your home service projects start to finish. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. Renters, you can use Angie too for moving, installations, or cleaning. Angie can even help with extremely specific projects. Just tell them what you need, and Angie will find the right solution for you. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today.
What is it like to with the momentum of crowds? Right? Again, all of these games, the home crowd gets going. You are a human being. How do you teach younger officials not to get caught up in the crowd and the energy and let it affect them?
See, I think just the opposite. I think I'd like to, you know, if it's a tough call and goes against the home team and they're booing the hell out of you, that kind of makes you feel good. And I just, I don't know why, it just makes like, hey, screw them. I'm right on the play. I don't care what they think. I'm right on the play. And, you know, majority of the time we are right. Unfortunately for them that, referees are, you know, for the most, the good ones are good 85, 90% of the time are pretty much correct. But I like that feeling of the home crowd coming down on you. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, the only other guy who was like that I remember, but now I didn't like having him as official because I thought he had too much rabbit ears on the little stuff, was Dave Libby.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Libby was the guy, though, that if you were on a road team and the home players or coaches or a fan pissed him off, then you'd feel like, all right, because he was the only guy in 4 years of college basketball who was on the scouting report. Libby's
Seriously?
In the game. Libby's doing the game.
Don't say anything.
Don't say a word. Don't stare at him. Don't do shit.
Yeah.
And by the way, my last college basketball game was the Elite Eight. Florida beat us, but he banged coach with a T. And all coach said was, Dave, that's the same call you made against Oklahoma. And it was bad then, and it's bad now. That's all he said. And he rang him up in the NCAA tournament.
Wow.
Wow. Okay, I'm gonna put you in charge. Now you're overseeing, you know, the West Coast. First, like why hang them up? Why go to the administrative level?
That's a great question. They came to me at the Final Four and asked me if I'd be interested. So I'm like, well, okay, yeah. What is it? What's the job entail? These jobs don't come open very often. And I just thought my wife's been after me for years about when are you going to give it up? When are you going to give it up? When are you going to give it up? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know when the time comes. And then this opportunity came up and I thought, well, let me take a look and shot at it. And then when I don't know if I'm trying to give back or trying to just, that's a good question. I could have refereed another 3, 4, 5 years. I could have. I don't know.
How much do you miss it?
Yeah, I do miss the court. I do miss the court. Yeah, I do. That's the fun part. I like going to the games now.
Has anyone ever come, like boxers come out of retirement? Have officials ever come out of retirement?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. There, Mike Littlewood, went to baseball, coached baseball at BYU for 8-10 years. He just came back 2 years ago. Yeah. Yeah. He's a high-level official, too. So, yeah, you never say never. You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. Well, with the, you know, with all what's happening in all of college sports, who knows what's going to happen with, you know, since the PAC is basically dissolved after I got the job. You don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to have a job next year. I don't know any of that stuff. So I don't know. We'll see.
You take a job to oversee a conference and then the conference goes away.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what the hell just happened? What did I do? So it is what it is. And whatever happens, happens. There's a reason.
I got two more for you. One, I give you your own rule book, John Higgins rule book. Mm-hmm. You've been doing this a long time. You know it chapter and verse. What would you change? What would you bring back? What would you do if you got a chance to change the rule book?
Well, first off, I'd make it way simpler. You know, have you ever read the rule book?
Yes.
So I had Jay Billis last year at a fundraiser in Omaha. And I was the MC with him, and he's obviously a very intelligent guy, an attorney by trade. And I said, Jay, have you ever read the rule book? Yeah. I said, could you understand this rule book? No, I can't understand it. You got to make it way simpler because there's exceptions to every rule and there's exceptions to the exceptions to that rule. So it needs to be much simpler, make more straightforward. There's a lot of rules that you could, and there's so many petty rules that none of us know, but, and I know one thing, coaches don't know them for sure. You could tell a coach, that's the rule, coach. And he goes, oh, okay. That's the rule. Okay. And they had no idea. So make it simpler would be the first thing I would do.
But no specific rules that you.
Like the other day, the Georgetown game, I don't know if you saw that. The guy stepped out of bounds. So if you can do it every other or all these sports, football, whatever, they go back on scoring play, especially at the end of games. They go back and say, oh no, the ball was out on the 12-yard line with 15 seconds to go on the clock. That score doesn't count. Why can't we do that in basketball? That play would never count it. They'd have put the ball back in the play with 1 second to go, other team's ball. Other team would have won the game. We can't do that in basketball. We can go and look at it. You know, if the ball goes out of bounds with between two people and it goes out of bounds to kick to see who hit it off of. But on that part, and you don't have a whistle, the biggest key is you don't have a whistle. So you can't look.
Well, let me ask you this though, okay? What about if there was a foul that pushed him out of bounds that wasn't called and he stepped out of bounds? Like there's the real, tricky part.
Can't go look if you don't have a whistle.
I understand. But what I'm saying is if there's a little of Pandora's box, right? Can you go back and call a foul that wasn't there to make up for the fact that
only if it's flagrant? Like I can't go call common foul.
I mean, I know you can't. I'm saying, should you be able to?
I'm giving you the complete autonomy. Yeah.
Okay, so that's different. So you think if you go back and you see a foul that you didn't previously see, you should be able to call that foul. Again, I'm not saying it's a rule now. I'm saying if it was the John Higgins, this is how I would do it rule book. Is that what your rule book would say?
Common sense. I think make it simpler. I think you should, all good officials are common sense guys, referee common sense. Again, if you don't, I mean, coaches are common sense most of the time. They don't want to nitpick things. And that's why I would referee. That's what I want guys to referee.
Last thing, okay, and you've been more than gracious in your time. because you were such a high-ranking official, because of the hair, and because you do have that kind of inner prick where I'll make the big call on the road, and you had your own style of block charge, you're forever going to be a guy like, all right, I hate that guy. What would you say to somebody who meets you on the street and a little bit like our conversation, I don't remember, it was Arizona Belmont, right? This is what happened. Belmont, Arizona was kicking the crap out of Belmont. And a kid from Arizona, God, I can't remember the kid's name. I think he's from LA. He hit a three and he turned around to the bench and said, bitch, or something like that. And you and you teed him. You whacked him. And I said, and this is what I said at the time, I was like, ah, that's a call from a guy.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right. And you came up to me
at the restaurant. Right?
And you came up to me. You came up to me like, hey, just so you know, my dad was a coach, played my whole life, played Division II basketball, whatever. Like, this is what he said. It's the right call. But to somebody who doesn't know you, who doesn't get a chance to have the personal interaction, what would you tell them about who you really are as a person, as opposed to who you were as an official?
I'm probably way kinder, nicer in as a person outside of the basketball court than I am on the basketball court. We do a lot of charitable things here in our town, and I do a lot of things for a guy that got me into officiating. He's lived in an apartment complex of mine for years and years and years. I just helped him move back into his apartment after 3 months in the hospital. And my wife she's very charitable. Our whole family's done that. We give to a bunch of Catholic organizations and we volunteer a bunch. So I don't know. That's the kind of person where we do a Madonna fundraiser thing. If that's what you're trying to ask.
No, I think it's more like, here's how I would sell you. It's like, just like Fran McCaffrey.
I'm different.
Can be a complete lunatic during a game, right? And then when you meet Fran McCaffrey, like, that's one of the kindest human beings I've ever met, right? When we're in that arena,
totally.
We take on our roles,
totally,
right? And part of your, and I will also say you were hardened by the years of being told
how terrible you were,
right? That can harden anybody.
Amen. Yeah, you know, that's true. It did over the years. At first, you know, if you took it literally, you'd be a mental case. You'd be totally a mental case. If you took it how bad you were and how what a piece of shit you are, and you're awful. You're the worst referee in the history of the basketball. And if you took that, if you listen to that shit all every day, you'd be in a mental ward. But nowadays I'm just like everybody else. I like to go drink it, have a drink or two every other night and go socialize and be a normal person. I love going to my lake house, just sitting there and doing nothing, or go and mow the lawn. I love mowing the lawn. I love keeping my yard looking pretty. I love that. It's so mindless. It's wonderful.
I'm going to get you free drinks. Okay. What is your go-to drink?
Tanqueray tonic, lemon lime, tall glass.
Okay, because I guarantee how many basketball people listen to this pod, and they're going to roll up on you and they'll be like, you know what, I got this one.
That's
he wants
right.
a gin and tonic.
Amen.
You know, that's how the sport works. Last thing, who's the GOAT? Who, from referee to referee, you're one of the most decorated referees in the history of the sport. Who is the guy who you believe is the
referee?
Best to ever do it?
Probably Jimmy Burke. Yeah, he had the courage, and I know you probably maybe didn't like him because you had him at Notre Dame, but he had the toughness.
Yeah.
He had great courage. He had great ability to take a game over it needed to. He wasn't probably the guy that would communicate the best with everybody, but other than that, he was a great play caller, and he had that it factor that. That not a lot of people have. Him and Timmy Higgins, Ted Hillary, there's a boatload of guys.
This is my favorite Tim Higgins story. Okay. So remember, he did my games a bunch at Notre Dame, and I got to know all you guys on a couple of these. The tournaments are the best because that's when you run into the reps in Puerto Rico and Hawaii, whatever. But we did a game at Louisville, and I think it was actually 1st of January. We did Louisville, Cincinnati. It was January 1 game, and it was an early game. And he beats me to the airport, and he's sitting at the airport bar, and I roll in, and we're watching a game, and it goes double overtime. And he turns to me and he says, "Mr. Gottlieb, do you know what we call double overtime in officiating?" And I said, no, Mr. Higgins, what do you call it?" He's a
bad officiating. That's true. I sent that. So one of my guys the other day refereed a double overtime game, and I sent him a text. I said, "You guys are fired. That two overtime, bad officiating."
We don't That's get right. paid by the hour. That's we right. get paid by the game.
That's right.
Let's wrap this shit up. Perfect timing. Hey, listen, I truly appreciate you joining me, kind of letting people behind the curtain, and the relationship that we've been able to kind of build through the years. So on the road, I owe you a gin and tonic. And in the meantime, thanks so much.
You bet, pal. Take care. We'll see you on the road here.
That's it for my John Higgins interview. I hope you enjoyed it. If you missed part one, download it. Make sure you write a review. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you rate the pod as well. And if you liked it, tweet it out. Send it to a friend. Tell me you dig All Ball. Tell me why you dig All Ball. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.